The Christian life is kind of a tension between saying yes to the world and no to the world. On one hand, we say yes because the world is good. All you need to do is look up at night and see a beautiful, you know, starscape. Go out to Colorado and look at the mountains. Behold a baby. And you know that what God has created in this world is good. And it speaks out against Puritanism and Manichaeism. And the church holds off any attempt to denigrate that this idea that matter or anything created is bad. And the church stands up to say, no, what God has created is good. But on the other hand, if we go too far the other way, we end up hedonist, where we end up setting up creatures or created things as divine or taking the place of God. Nothing in creation is God. And sometimes we lose sight of that. And so the Christian life is kind of this tension of saying yes to the good things in the world, but not such a big yes that we begin to worship creation. And not such a big no that we make it sound like everything God has created in this world is bad. You see, for the Christian, for the Catholic, it is both yes and no. And we see this dynamic reflected in our scriptures today. There's the story of a young banker who was driving his BMW through the mountains through a snowstorm, and he came around a curve and lost control and went towards a cliff. And at the last moment, he was able to unbuckle his seatbelt and jump from the car. And though he escaped with his life, his left arm caught the door hinge and tore his shoulder off. Now, a trucker passing nearby witnessed the accident, and he stopped his rig, and he ran back and to see if he could help. And there, standing in a state of shock, was the banker at the edge of the cliff moaning, "Oh, my BMW, my BMW. Now, the trucker pointed to the banker's shoulder and said, "Man, you've got bigger problems than your car." With that, the banker looked at his shoulder, finally realizing that he had lost his arm, and began crying, "Oh no, my new Rolex, my new Rolex." In our first reading, Solomon is king of Israel, and he's looking back at all his riches in his life. He's looking back at the end of his life at all that he's gained. And what does he say? Vanity of vanities. In other words, he's looking back at all that he has and saying, what's it worth? Here's a list of the things that Solomon had at the end of his life. Many houses, vineyards, gardens, and parks, fruit trees, slaves, flocks, singers. He had his own singers. Wouldn't that be nice? Somebody to sing you to sleep at night? He had so much silver that it was common as dirt, gold shields, a solid ivory throne, a solid gold throne, fleets of ships, robes of the finest materials, weapons. He had a storage building specifically made for exotic spices. Wouldn't that be nice? Most of us are doing good to have a spice rack, right? He had herds of mules, peacocks. He had his own peacocks. 1,400 chariots, 12,000 horses, and land that extended as far as the eye could see. Now, are any of these things bad in and of themselves? Singers? No. Spices? No. Horses? No. But when they become our focus, our wealth, then we've lost sight of God. In our second reading, Paul is speaking to the Colossians, and he says to them to think of what is above and not of what is on earth. Now, at first hearing, you might think that he's kind of dissing the earth. He's trying to say, well, don't think of anything here on earth. Well, when he says earth and earthly, He's talking about the things that we get attached to on earth that leave out God. Okay? He's not talking about the earth in its goodness, but the earth in the way in that it tends to skew our affections. St. Paul is engaging the world too. You got to remember, St. Paul was a tent maker by trade, right? He was the Coleman of his time. And so he'd go around and you could pay him to make you a tent. And what is a tent? It's great to get out of the rain, great to get out of the elements, great place to sleep. But is it a permanent dwelling? No. And he actually goes on to use that analogy for our lives here on earth. What your existence right now is, your body, your family, your possessions, it's all a tent. It's all temporary. All it is getting us through the elements so that we can enjoy heaven. St. Paul also goes on to say our citizenship is in heaven. This is important to remember, especially in an election year, that as Christians, our citizenship is not just in this country, and that is important, but even more importantly, our citizenship is in heaven. And so St. Paul goes on to say that we are to put to death those parts of us that are earthly. And notice then he goes on to explain what's earthly. He's not saying everything in the world is bad. He says immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and the greed that is idolatry. Idolatry is when we take a created thing and we set it up as God. And none of you would tell me if I asked you face to face that you do that. But we all do. We set up our jobs so that we can earn enough money to have a nice house. We set that up as God, as priority over other things. We set up our activities as priority over other things. And in the end, it really comes down to our stewardship, our time, talent, and our treasure. And when we use those things for created things and not for the glory of God, that's when we start getting in trouble. You see, what St. Paul's trying to get across, brothers and sisters, is that for us as Christians, morality comes down to this. We have to say yes to the good things in this world, but we have to say no to their misuse or when they lack priority. Now in our gospel today, Jesus tells this story, this parable about a rich man. Is wealth bad? No. It can be used for great good. You may have heard a couple years ago that 40 of the richest billionaires in the world got together and decided to give away half their wealth. Keep in mind, they're still going to be billionaires when they're done. But it's a start, right? This man in the gospel today, he's got full barns. He's set. And then he has this great harvest and he has an excess. And what does he want to do with that excess? He wants to store it up for himself. Brothers and sisters, that's the problem. When God gives us an excess, what do we do with it? I was speaking with a family the other day who, the husband who's the breadwinner for the family was injured, and he can't work for a couple months. And I asked him straight out, are you going to be okay financially? And they said, yes, we've been saving up. Every little bit we can, we've been saving up. And our tax return this year, we saved it. And I kind of chuckled and I said, well, that's great. Because so many people I know, they get their tax return and it's what can I spend it on for myself? Brothers and sisters, one of the reasons that a lot of us struggle in this life, especially I think financially or with the things of this world, are that when we have an excess of it, we don't use it well. And so God stops giving the excess because the excess isn't meant for us. It's meant for others. We also have a problem recognizing what's excess is. I was talking to somebody the other day who's going through a home renovation, and they were saying, oh, it's so stressful, right? And I wasn't trying to be mean, but I said, you have a roof over your head. You have a floor. That's much better than a good percentage of the world. And we got to remember that, especially as Christians in this country. You see, our no to serving ourselves has to balance our yes of embracing the good things of this world. Now, we all struggle with this balance. No matter how holy you are, you struggle with it. What area is that for you? Is it alcohol? A good thing. St. Paul even says at the end of one of his letters, and have a little wine. How many of you end your letters that way? Right? It's okay to enjoy the good things in this world and to enjoy life. But do we do it to excess? Self-serving excess. Our human sexuality. Our hobbies. Our sports. Our jobs. Our pursuit of a new home or a nice car. Is it good to have a car that runs and gets you from point A to point B? Yes. Do we have to have the latest and the greatest? No. So how can we affirm with a hearty yes that God has created a good world and at the same time say no to its excess? Brothers and sisters, figuring out that dynamic is the task that each one of us are charged with every day. And the key is when it becomes self-serving. Self-serving. Because then it leads nowhere. I want to end with sharing with you a story. It's a popular story that recounts a meeting that took place at the Edgewater Beach Motel in Chicago in 1923. On that day, 9 of the richest men in the world gathered for a meeting. You might recognize the name of a few of them. Charles Schwab, president of the largest independent steel company. Samuel Insull, president of the largest utility. Howard Hobson, president of the largest gas firm. Arthur Cutton, the greatest great wheat spectator. Richard Whitney, the president of the New York Stock Exchange. Albert Fall, the president of member of the president's cabinet. Leon Frazier, the president of the International Bank. And Jesse Livermore, the greatest spectator of the stock market. And lastly, Ivor Kruger, head of the company of the most widely distributed securities in the world. Now, 20 years later, where were these men? Charles Schwab died in bankruptcy, living the last 5 years of his life on borrowed money. They don't tell you that in their commercials, do they? Samuel Insull died penniless. Howard Hobson became insane. Arthur Cutton died overseas broke. Richard Whitney spent time in a mental asylum. Albert Fall was released from prison so he could die at home. And the last 3 committed suicide. This is where an excess of wealth will get you. Our gospel says today, you fool. And we are all fools if we think that wealth is going to get us anywhere in this life. You fool, this night your life will be demanded of you. The things you have prepared, to whom will they belong? You must be rich in what matters to God. And so, brothers and sisters, what are you rich in? Are you rich in activity in your lives? Are you rich in monetary wealth? Rich in busyness? Are you rich in the things that matter to God?